Well, happy Thursday, everybody. You're going to love today's conversation as we really dig in on some really fascinating concepts around communicating the gospel in a multicultural, really urban context. We also have a brand new sponsor today. Super excited to introduce you to House Right. They have worked with massive churches of over 10,000 people who really have been building out massive audio, visual, and lighting systems in excess of $1 million. But perhaps your church isn't that size and you're a more normal size church, maybe 500 to 1250, somewhere in that, and you're launching your first campus next year and you're wondering where to start. Well, this is where House Right comes in. They are helping churches do really everything in audio visual lighting really well, from setting up a very cost-effective solution to capture message through thinking through portable systems in a school, to a simple build out in an empty retail space, all the way up to really a premier location anywhere. Listen, you want to get these guys into your discussion early if you're thinking about a building project. It's not 2005 anymore. Your team is already stretched and you don't need to be stretched anymore by the audio, visual, and lighting about that upcoming project. Please, what I want you to do is to reach out to Matt McKay. He is an incredible leader. He's an engineer by trade, and he's worked as a volunteer all the way up from, you know, the kind of bad gym all the way up to really a multi-million dollar space. You are going to love connecting with him. What I want you to do is to reach out to them today at houseright.com. If you are considering a project in the next year or two, these are the guys to talk to. I would highly recommend you give them a call. Again, that's houseright.com. All right, let's tune into today's conversation. Let's go.
Welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. Are you looking for practical ministry help to drive your ministry further, faster? Have a sinking feeling that your ministry training didn't prepare you for the real world? Hey, you're not alone. Join thousands of others in pursuit of stuff that we wish they had taught in seminary. Buckle up and let's get started with this week's Unseminary Podcast.
Hey everybody, welcome to the Unseminary Podcast. My name is Rich, the host around these parts. Happy Thursday. We know as you're heading into this weekend, you've got a lot going on at your church and we're just honored that you put us in your earbuds and listen in today. I'm excited for today's conversation. We've got Daryl Dash from Liberty Grace Church in Toronto, another Canadian, two Canadians on the podcast, which is great. You know, 95% of the people who listen are Americans, but you're going to want to lean in because Liberty Grace is a fantastic church. You're going to want to know more about. Daryl's an incredible leader. So welcome to the show, Daryl.
Rich, it is so good to talk to you.
Yeah, it's so funny. We were saying before we got started, we're kind of in each other's backyards, and it's funny that this is the way we've met. So, which is fine, but so glad to have you on the show. Why don't you tell us a little bit about Liberty Grace? Kind of give us the story there. What's God been up to at this church, you know, over these years?
You know, about 6 or 7 years ago, I really began to pray for God to raise up church planters in downtown Toronto. I never thought it would be me. I had about 25 yes. reasons why it could never be me, and then. Yes. You know, it became so obvious that the only thing that would keep us from doing it would be fear. So 6 years ago, we moved into the area. And then 5 years ago, we began the church. So it's been, I keep telling people, it's been the funnest thing we've ever done. And it's been the hardest thing we've ever done. So it's a privilege. Liberty Village is right downtown Toronto, probably 1% churched in the community. Mm-hmm. Very young community, high-rise condos. I love it, but the turnover is huge. I think we have people for maybe a year, year and a half before they move on. Mm-hmm. So it has been a lot of fun, but it is also, man, it's not easy. But I wouldn't be doing anything else, honestly.
Yeah. So for folks that don't know, Toronto is the most multicultural city in the world. It often gets that, you know, distinction every year. That the part of town you're talking about is a, you know, this is an urban area. It is a, you know, kind of a hip, cool place to live. It's a great part of town. It's, you know, a part of that kind of global elite, great place where folks, young leaders who are, you know, working, you know, in head offices and all different kinds of things. I can imagine it's quite a diverse neighborhood and diverse kind of group of people that you're reaching. Why don't you give us a bit of a flavor of the ministry at Liberty Grace? If people were to arrive this weekend, what would they experience?
You know, one of the unusual things is we meet at 4 o'clock in the afternoon. We have a storefront and we're not that big, actually. Like we're a fairly small church. And so, you know, we're Baptist technically, but we're a little bit eclectic. So
I love that, Baptist technically.
That's right. Well, you know, it was funny. In the community one day, somebody said, hey, what denomination are you? And we're like, you know, we don't really make a big deal about it. But I said, we're Baptist. And the guy literally jumped back about a foot. And I said, you just recoiled. He said, no, I didn't. And I said, you did. And I get it. And it led to a really interesting discussion. But yeah, we're eclectic. So, you know, if you're unchurched, you come in, it's pretty relaxed. It's low key. We try to make everybody feel welcome. We begin every service by saying, you know, whether you're a skeptic or a curious or a longtime Christian, we're glad you're here. And we just want to create a place for people to engage with the claims of Christ with honesty. So I would say, you know, we are so not glitzy. Like, we have every other church probably has better music, better preaching, but the one thing we have is we have honesty. And I think God, for whatever reason, has given us just honest people who refuse to pretend. So that's what I really like. There's just an authenticity. I know that's overused, but that's something we didn't really plan, but God's just given us, and it's been really cool to see.
Yeah, and I think, you know, this is a fascinating church for folks to follow and track with. You're a fascinating leader to track with because, you know, I think in a lot of ways, Canada is it's in a different place than the States. In some ways, it's, I don't know whether you call it like farther down the road or worse down the road from an unchurched point of view. You know, a radically small percentage of people attend church in general in Canada. And then, you know, the area you're in, like you say, is even less than that, which I think is important lesson for all of us to learn from. How do we, you know, reach a community like this, which I think is the kind of thing we want to, you know, learn from. It's kind of post-postmodern, whatever comes after postmodern, definitely Toronto is that. And so I do think this is a fascinating study, you know, for us to learn from. And so I'm honored that you're on the show today. Now, one of the things one of the things I'd love to do is kind of get back to even some basics and talk through, in that kind of context, how do you talk about or help people wrestle through what it means to grow spiritually, to grow in their relationship with Christ? What is the kind of ways that you, you know, you wrestle with that part of what we do as church leaders?
You know, one of the things I notice in the area, despite being very low, you know, a lot of people have no exposure to Christianity. When you begin to talk about, you know, there's got to be more to life than this, you can see they're engaged. So, you know, one of the early experiences I had was going to a cafe in the area that shut down. And that night, everything was half price. And I showed up, honestly, thinking, I'm going to pick up some half price food. Now, if I were smart, I would have said, I need to be there because the whole community is going to be there. And I went there. By the time I got there, there was a person in the community who was quite, how would you say? She had a little bit to drink and bit hammered. So she came to me and she was saying, you know, you guys are a church. I'm not a Christian. She said, I have everything. Like, I've got the condo, I've got the car, I've got the job, I've got the money. And she said, I'm still not happy. And she said, I'm so glad that you're here in the community because this community needs you. Now, I don't think she would have ever said that to me if she was sober. But it was interesting, you know, look into our community. Like, Liberty Village is a fairly well-off community and people have good jobs. And I still think there's, as I talk to people, there's still this, almost like a book of Ecclesiastes hunger for, I know there's more. You know, I know that, and they look to philanthropy and they look to, you know, different things to fill that need. But so when you begin to talk about growth, I think that people instantly realize I need that. Like, I just feel stuck. I maybe feel like I thought I would be in a different place than I am. And they recognize they're just not satisfied, even though they have all the stuff they ever wanted.
Interesting. And so when you, you know, kind of begin, you know, talking about, you know, even how someone grows, how they can, you know, grow spiritually, what are some of the ways that you're framing that, you know, for people to understand in your community?
One of the things we try to emphasize is, you know, the whole image of what a Christ follower looks like. And I think I grew up with this is like, all of a sudden, you've got to become this serious person who really, like, if you used to like partying or whatever, now you don't. And what we like to kind of back into is, what do you think it means to be fully alive? And we begin to explore that. So again, the book of Ecclesiastes, I think, is so helpful. Like, all the stuff that we look to for ultimate happiness, it actually is a gift from God. So, like, I love how Ecclesiastes says, like, enjoy life. Like, if you got a great job, enjoy that. If you like, you know, I'm Baptist, so I don't know if I'm allowed to say this or not. If you like good wine, really sit for that wine. Like, if you have nice clothes, wear those clothes. But in the end, they're not going to satisfy you. And we begin to talk about what would it look like for people to really flourish and thrive. And, you know, it's a different conversation when you get to, you know, we want to avoid self-help. So we don't want it to become like it's all about you. But what we want to back into is, you know, the road to happiness is actually not by pursuing happiness. It's by pursuing God. And by pursuing God, not only do you get to enjoy all of his gifts, but you get to enjoy him. And that leads actually to not you becoming this otherworldly serious person, but it actually leads to you being more fully alive. So that's an interesting discussion, because that's not what people think of when they think of, you know, what it means to follow Christ.
Mm-hmm. Interesting. Yeah, it's true. Because I think sometimes we think of, you know, or the popular opinion can be that, you know, following Christ is actually a reductionist experience. It's actually going to take things away from your life rather than how, you know, we understand scripture that actually following Jesus is actually going to be, is kind of the greatest enhancement of life. And so, yeah, I think that's an incredible way to position. And I think, you know, like you were saying, even that woman you ran into at that coffee shop that night, you know, I think if we're honest, you know, I had a friend of mine once say, you know, we're trying to reach a generation of rich young rulers. We're trying to reach a generation of people who literally have everything. And that's true. Like, that is, you know, people have access to more than they've ever had before. So how do we help them, you know, continue to grow? How do we help them to take these, you know, steps towards Christ? So yeah, I think this is great. Now, when you know, kind of get practical with folks, where does that conversation lead? How do you, push the conversation towards, hey, here are some steps you could take?
You know, what we do is we really talk about a couple of things, and one is to take the pressure off. So the last thing people need is more pressure. And a few years ago, I came across a guy, you might have heard of him, Ray Ortland in Emmanuel, Nashville. And I really picked up the vibe from him. Like, when people come in, I think they're expecting some high pressured, like, you know, you guys need to do a whole lot better. And he talks about providing his big three are gospel plus safety plus time. And what we do when people come in, and it's ironic because you're wanting to grow, is we say, look, we know everybody here, including me, needs a lot of gospel, a lot of safety, and a lot of time. So we're not going to rush you. We actually want to counterintuitively take the pressure off. And, you know, you can come in messy, honest, full of struggles, full of questions, and full of doubts. So, you know, this is so counterintuitive, because I think, you know, I was just watching this morning a little bit of a documentary about Tony Robbins. And it was interesting. I don't know a lot about Tony, but, you know, without picking on him, I think so much of the stuff we read is actually ramping up the pressure rather than taking off the pressure. And I think of Jesus' invitation to the tired. We live in a tired society that's sick of proving themselves. So that's one thing we do. And then the next thing we do is, you know, we do try to ease people into encountering Jesus and his claims. So I heard one guy, he talked about self-help being like, basically as helpful as, you know, all this, the stuff that we talk about. I think you talked about like sticking your hand in the blender and expecting that that's going to help somehow. Like, it just doesn't work. So in some way to say, like, you know what, the solution isn't found within yourself. You've got to look somewhere else to get the grace that you need. And that grace is more than available no matter where you are and what you've done. So, you know, it's really cool. Like, we got one lady that showed up at church. She shows up. She cries pretty much the whole service, and it's because her life is so hard. We've gotten to know her and her story a little bit. I can't share too much about it, but I love that she just feels safe coming in here and knowing, like, I just need to kind of lean into the grace of Jesus. And then we do move on. Like, it's not just like kumbaya, relax, chill out, or whatever. I think there are some habits we encourage people to pursue that begin to lead to growth. But I think it begins with that idea of gospel plus safety plus time.
That's cool. That's really good. First of all, I love how you're positioning that there. I think I don't want people to miss how you're, you know, you're trying to set the conversation up. How do you feel that is kind of uniquely missional to the age we're in? Do you feel like that? Because I think in some ways that's universally true or has been true, you know, I think probably of all time. But is there a way that it's that, you know, those three today are kind of more true than they've ever been, you know, and maybe even in your context, you know, specifically, how is that true in the kind of current environment you find yourself?
You know, the current environment, and it's interesting because I visit other cities and it feels like something's off. And then I come back to Toronto and I realize there's something about living in a big city like Toronto that is so pressurized. So I love Toronto. Like, I am a huge Toronto fan. But where I live, I mean, even at a stoplight, I find myself like the guy in front of me is not, you know, the light turns green. Maybe there's like a half a second and he's not moving. And all of a sudden I feel this anxiety rise within me. It's like, what is going, like, how come he's not moving? There's just something about, I don't know what it is. And I'm sure it's not unique to Toronto, but we do live in a high pressure time. I think the other thing too is something unique is happening within our society that even though, I mean, people talk about the move from a guilt culture to a shame culture. Like, we've moved away from a sense of guilt. Like, nobody would say there's a set of objective standards or moral laws that we're violating, but that's been replaced with a sense that there's something deeply flawed within me. And, you know, when I talk to people, it's interesting because it used to be when I've been pastoring for a while, when we used to talk about, you know, we've failed, like there's something wrong with us, I would get pushback. Now, when I bring that up, we all know there's something wrong with us. I never get pushback. I think people instinctively sense that.
Right.
You know, I don't know what law I'm violating. I don't even buy the Ten Commandments or whatever, but I know that there's something not quite right with me. So, yeah, I'm not sure. I'm not sure I understand everything. I just think there's this deep sense of, you know, there is something bigger than us, and whatever that is, I don't get it, and I don't feel like I'm living into it.
Interesting. Yeah, I would agree with you on that. I think there has been a shift around. And I think I think you've articulated that in an astute way, the, you know, guilt versus shame culture. I think, you know, there is, you know, when you listen to any kind of human development, anything, book, podcast, you know, there isn't this starting point that like, hey, everything is great, which is a very modern idea, right? That like, hey, we're all, you know, oriented in the, you know, a perfect direction. It's like, you know, you know, there's something that needs to be fixed within me. And that's, so that's interesting. That's, now you talked earlier around, you know, some practical habits. How do you take, you know, how do you articulate what those could be in a way that resonates with the, you know, the culture? What are those habits? How do you talk about those things?
Yeah. So what we do is we begin to talk about some habits that would really help people to grow. And, now, this is going to sound a little bit more churchy. It might sound a little bit weird, but Lifeway did a study a few years ago, and they kind of looked at behaviors that Christ followers want to cultivate. And then they looked at, you know, what that's the end result. What are actually the front end things that lead to those desired results? And I've kind of tweaked that. And we tell people, we really want you to just commit to do three things. And okay. We borrow a lot from, I don't know if you've heard of BJ Fogg and Tiny Habits, the whole idea of like, make this ridiculously small so you can't possibly fail. Like, don't set out to do this in a heroic way, set out to do this in a very manageable way so that you're 80 to 90% sure that you'll be able to pull this off. And what we tell people to do is, you know, first encounter the Word of God. And I know nothing sounds more, you know, that's what you expect to hear in a church. And yet, it's like
they're paying you to say that.
Sorry, I was expecting that. And yet, yes. The reality is, it's not happening. And we, you know, the thing we want to provide on ramps for people to encounter biblical truth, and whether they're exploring Christianity, and that's the beauty. I want them to do that in community, but somehow to, especially if you're not a believer, to encounter the radical teachings of Jesus. Which, if you're expecting the Bible to be boring, man, it is anything but that. You just got to get the right, we live in an age with great tools. So helping people to discover the Bible. So that would be one.
Before we move on with that, so one of the things I've had a privilege of sitting in that kind of coaching communicators sitting as a kind of, hey, like, can you help me improve this thing? And one of the things I say all the time to people when they'll like send me a message or we'll talk about it, you know, after I'm there on a Sunday, you know, and this goes across the spectrum, if there is a spectrum, and I'm not even sure what the spectrum is, but I'll say universally to church leaders, particularly people who talk for a living in churches, people don't read the Bible in your church. They just don't. And we assume that way too much. We assume that they, you know, that they, that they've been reading all week, that most people who are sitting in most churches today, the last time they heard scripture was the last time they were in church. And so, and people push back on that. And I'm like, listen, I think if you did some honest inquiry, you'd find that to be true. And so we have to go out of our way to make it as straightforward and as simple, and to take some of the guilt out of that fact and say, hey, how do I give you practical tools to do that? How do I make it easier for you? I had a guy in my own like small group within our church, and you know, he was being really honest, and he, you know, we had been at this point been journeying for, I don't know, maybe a year. And he said to me, he said, and it was after a meeting one night, we were just like having a coffee, hanging out after. And he said, you know, Rich, like, I've been a Christian for basically since I was a kid. I've been doing this for a long time. And I got to be honest, like, I just don't read the Bible. You know, what can I do? And I said, you know, in that moment, I realized, hey, at this moment, I could use guilt and shame at this moment, right? And make him feel bad. He already feels bad about it. There isn't, he's not coming to me because he's like, I feel great about this. He's like, he already feels bad about it. But I said, you know what, dude, that's amazing. I totally understand. And I gave him a really simple, like, hey, let's open up your phone. Let's download the YouVersion app, and let's take a very, and I said, for me, the difference, and for me, one of the things that makes a difference, and maybe it shouldn't, but it does. If I get like one of these plans where it, I get to hit the little check mark box and say, I read it, that's fantastic. Why don't we start with a 3-day reading plan and then get that thing done? And let's see how that goes. And then from 3 days, maybe we bump up to a 5-day reading plan. And then from there, maybe we go to a 7-day reading plan. And then maybe if that goes really great, we go to a 28-day plan. And then and he would continue to build from there. Well, you know, as he got into this, got plugged in, and actually after a year, he ended up in a whole year-long plan. And he said to me at the end of it, I said, you know, Rich, I've never read this much scripture before in my entire life. And, you know, he was thankful and all, blah, blah, blah. And I said, listen, you know, good for you. Like, you know, you kind of chunked it down, made it simple, went forward. And my challenge, I guess, for people who are listening in, like you're saying here, we have to do the long distance to help people read and listen to scripture. And we can't make it simple enough. How are you doing that practically? How are you helping people, you know, take those steps in a, you know, in the culture you're in, to, you know, for people where, you know, folks would roll their eyes and say, oh, of course, you know, of course, that's what he's going to say.
You know, so I'll tell you how I've done it poorly. A few years ago, I came across the Bible Project, and they have videos and a reading plan and everything. And I went to the church and I said, we all need to do this next year. Well, 2 months later, my wife came up to me and she said, you've ruined my Bible reading. Like, I had something good going. Oh, I had a pattern going that was working for me. I switched to what you told me to do, and it completely ruined everything. And so she had to kind of, you know, make her way back to finding her rhythm again. So, you know, what I've found is you just have to raise the value and then give people a couple different on-ramps. So one thing I do, I came across a Bible app recently called Dwell. It's a subscription one. I think they offer a little bit of free stuff, but what Dr. One Guy, and a pastor actually, who he had just read the Bible for years and got so tired of it. And when he switched to listening to the Bible, all of a sudden it gave him a freshness that he'd never had before. So, you know, what I like to do with people generally is say, like, I want you to figure it out. I want you to shrink the challenge so that this is manageable. It's something that actually can become part of your life. And if there's resistance, like you say, I think it's a mistake to lean into guilt and shame to motivate them. So what I want to do is, like, okay, hold on, like, take the pressure off. Why is this important to you? And if it's not important, that's a different discussion. But if it is important, it's like, okay, what can we do to tap into that motivation and shrink the challenge until it works for you? So, you know, like, the days are getting shorter. I'm finding it harder to get up in the morning. My routine is getting a little bit harder. So I'm kind of looking at that myself. Like, how do I tweak my own environment to make it a bit easier to build that habit in my life? So Really what I try to do is help people build habits. And when the habits don't work, kind of take a step back and evaluate why they're not working. And then maybe to shift the habit in some way so it does work better for them.
I love that. Even just that practical tip around, you know, trying to shift people to listening rather than, you know, than reading. There for sure is a shift towards audio. That's like an, you know, from a marketplace point of view, that's an undeniable trend. And, you know, actually helping people, and all these apps are not all of them, but the one you mentioned, YouVersion, has the same thing where you know, if you pick a translation, it will, you know, it'll read it to you in actually a really reasonable voice. I love that. That's fantastic. What would be, you know, and maybe these ones we can touch on quicker, and then we can help people with, you know, how to get more resources. What are some other core habits? And again, I'm assuming these are the kinds of things that, you know, people have heard before, but how do you talk about them in a way that helps draw people in?
Yeah, the second one is prayer. And this is another kind of eye-rolling one. But I've talked to an atheist recently who was going through a bit of a crisis. And she said to me, like, I was praying. And she kind of laughed. It's like, I have no idea who I was praying to or why I was praying, but I was praying. So here's about irony about prayer. Like, it is so easy that it's just an atheist knows how to do it. It is so hard that if you talk to the most spiritually mature person, they would say, I suck at prayer. Like, the spiritual giants I know, they all say, I have no idea. Like, I don't know what I'm doing. I feel like I'm just beginning to get this prayer thing figured out. So a few years ago, this is another thing where I think just taking the guilt off really does help. I read a book by Paul Miller called A Praying Life. And he tells the story of his daughter who was, you know, she's got some special needs, and he was going through some real challenges in how to parent her. And one morning he was doing devotions, and she would get up way too early and she'd be making a noise and waking up the other kids. And his response was to yell, like, get back to bed. And that didn't work. And after a while, he's like, you know what? Why don't I shift tactics? Why don't I actually begin to pray about it? And he did. It sounds kind of ridiculous, right? Like, but it actually not, I don't, prayer doesn't always work in this way, but it actually helped. Mm-hmm. And he talked about a big paradigm shift for him was, what if I start to approach my prayer as a way to manage my life? Whenever I'm overwhelmed or whenever I'm dealing with something or even planning out the day, like, what am I going to do today? Instead of seeing prayer as another thing to do, why don't I just see it as it's a way to manage my life with the Father's help. So we just try to get people to say, like, you know, don't come to God thinking you need to be all pious. Don't come to God thinking you need to be all put together. Pray almost like an atheist does instinctively. Like, just come with your mess, share everything with him. You don't have to pretend if you're feeling tempted or really whatever, just tell him all about it. And so just making it much more relational and conversational. So, you know, I think people, you can begin to see their eyes light up. I think part of the challenge with prayer is taking away the guilt and helping people just see, like, this is actually a way that you can, you know, manage your life rather than just another thing to add to your life.
Very cool. And what's the last of the three?
The last one is, and again, it's kind of crazy. It sounds like, I'd say this, is to get involved with both community and worship within a church. And I want to lean into that community part. Like, what I'm talking about isn't just showing up at a church, taking in a service and leaving, but really beginning to open your life to people. So I kind of backed into this. So, for years I've known that this is important. I've really become convinced that the Bible really should be, you know, when we read "you" in the original language, it's usually a plural. It's like almost like the Bible. I want a translation that says "y'all," right? Like, y'all should be doing this.
It's true,
because we read it "you" and we think it's like, oh, I, and it's it's we. And what we need is we need to create church communities where people are able to come and just be, you know, safe and living together. So we had, I'll just give you two quick stories: one fictional, one real. The fictional story is this. A guy got so fed up. I read in a book, a guy got so fed up with pretending. And one day he just lost it at church. And he stood up and he said, I am so sick of pretending. Let me tell you what's going on in my life. And he just, you know, was one of those uncomfortable moments where they found out more about this guy than they really wanted to know. And he sat down just feeling mortified. Like, I've been exposed. I'm relieved I don't have to pretend anymore. But man, like, nobody's going to want to talk to me. The next person got up and said, is that all you got? And he began to share about his life and his struggles. And I love that. The whole idea of church being not a place where we pretend, but where we come and are real. So here's the real story. We have somebody show up at one of our, we call them grace groups, at our church. And her first time, she was going through a divorce. First time. And, you know, usually she would kind of back into it, you know, be, oh yeah, everything's going great. That night she just fell apart and she opened her life, her fears, her, you know, disappointments and everything. What I noticed around the group is you would think that would be a draining moment where it was like, oh man, like how did she get in here? What happened actually was everyone around that group, it was almost like they breathed a sigh of relief and said, finally, I have permission to be real too. And that's what I'm talking about with a community. I think we're meant to be part of this community where we actually let people in and we can begin to encourage and, you know, admonish and actually be real with each other. So that's a gift when that happens. And I think that's crucial. It's a crucial habit to develop.
Well, I'm sure as people are listening in, they, you know, they've realized that Daryl, you're a fresh communicator. I think you have a unique way of talking about timeless truth in a way that, you know, is really relevant for today. And, you know, I think that's been a gift for us today on this podcast, but you've actually packaged up some of these learnings into a book called How to Grow, Applying the Gospel to All of Your Life, which I'd love to hear a little bit about. Why did you write this book? Why did you decide, it's a lot of time, effort, and energy to pull together a book. Why did you, you know, write this book?
You know, so my wife a few years ago, she was an accountant. She actually escaped that life now. But okay. She came home one day, she said, I've got a new client. And I said, oh, wahoo. And it turned out it was an online nutrition coaching company. And right away, I was like, what in the world have you done? Like, I don't know if there's anything shadier than an online nutrition company. And I began.
Buy some pills.
Yeah, that's right. Exactly. Well, you know, she lost 60 pounds. She was just working for them. And I began to research these guys. They had PhDs in nutrition science. And they were coaching the Toronto Maple Leafs and other professional sports teams. They had written textbooks. What these guys did, though, was they were able to take theoretical knowledge and make it practical and applicable for everyday people like us. At the same time, I was beginning to plant the church. And honestly, after 25 years of pastoring, I was feeling like, I've got all this theoretical knowledge. I've got the gospel. You know, I could probably have a theological debate about almost any topic with you. I don't feel like I'm that good at translating it into just practical steps that people can take and grow. So it was actually through a nutrition company that I began to be challenged of how do I take the gospel and how do I make it applicable to people in Liberty Village who just want to figure out how to live their lives. So that's kind of a weird way, but that's the true story behind why I began to think about this book.
Yeah. And so from, you know, the book really is a practical guide. It talks through how people can grow spiritually, you know, and really it seems like to me, it struck me as I was, you know, going through it, what this would be a great tool even for a church to use, say, with small groups or, you know, as a basis of a series or that kind of thing. It really is a tool for you know, churches as a whole. Is that the kind of thing you were thinking through when you pulled it together?
Absolutely. So at the end of each chapter, I put a chapter summary and then also some questions that can be used. They can be used individually, but honestly, I think they're really perfect for a small group. So yeah, I think it's a book that is best read together if possible.
Yeah. And I think I would encourage people. One of the things that, you know, folks who've been listeners for a while of the podcast know is I don't, you know, listen, we could have authors on every week. And I try not to have authors on all the time, but authors who do come out of local church experience. And that's one of the things I find really fresh about this is it's not, you know, it's not written, like you say, from like the realm of theory. It's written, it jumps out of your experience pastoring, you know, in a vibrant community. And you're, you know, this weekend, you got to figure out how to get the message out the door and do all the other stuff that a, you know, church plant requires. And so it comes from, it's really forged in, you know, an actual church, you know, which I think gives it a ring of authenticity that I think is helpful for all of us. So I would encourage people to pick up, at least pick up a copy, and then, you know, might be the kind of thing you could buy multiples of it and use it for groups, that kind of thing. If people want to get a copy of it, where can they pick it up?
It is available at any major bookseller, that Amazon. If you actually want to go my website, Dash House, D-A-S-H, and then house.com. There is a link there to the book, and the book has links to all the major booksellers, and you can get it there.
Yeah, that's perfect. That's great. Is there anything, you know, more about the book or anything else you want to share before we move on with the rest of the episode?
Yeah, you know, I always feel funny saying this, but at the end of the book is really my favorite chapter. And I always feel funny. I don't know if I'm allowed to have a favorite, but the end of the book is really telling the story of ordinary people who've impacted my life. And I think what I want to tell anybody listening is, you know, I think we tend to buy into the belief that our lives don't really matter that much. We're not having much of an influence on people. And I just want to encourage anybody listening, your life matters. You have no idea how much of an influence you're having on people without even knowing it. So, you know, I just want to I always want to leave people with a word of encouragement of the difference that they're making in the lives of other people. And, you know, recognize that and be encouraged by how God is going to use often our ordinary and weak lives to make an eternal difference in the lives of others.
This is the Unseminary Podcast, stuff you wish they taught in seminary.
Well, we're going to jump into the lightning round, that part of the episode where we ask similar questions of everybody that's on the show today. It's my honor to have Pastor Daryl Dash with us from Liberty Grace Church, a fantastic church you should be following along, and then, you know, really getting a chance to lean in and listen to how they communicate. They do great work, so you need to follow along with them. Daryl, what is an online resource that you're using these days to help you in what you do?
One is AppSumo. APPSUMO.
I think you're the first. I know AppSumo, but I think you're the first person in over 200 episodes coming on three who's ever mentioned AppSumo. So tell us
what
about
it. Is basically they offer lifetime deals to software services that, and I find it addictive. You go on there, usually their prices are $49, and it gives you lifetime access to a tool. And to be honest, only maybe one out of five or 10 appeal to me. But whenever you get one of those deals for $49 for a lifetime, it's like, holy smokes, this has just been so worth it. So I'm a little bit addicted to AppSumo.
Yeah, that's great. That's fantastic. What's a book you've read in the last, I don't know, maybe 6 months to a year that's inspiring or shaping your thinking in ministry?
Yeah, a weird one. It's not a Christian book, but High Performance Habits by, what's his name? Brendan Burchard, I think is his name. And it's just a really practical book on how to build, you know, again, I think because in the book I talk a lot about habits, I've just appreciated this book on how to develop habits that will help you in life.
Very cool. What's another ministry you're looking at these days that inspires you?
Last September, I went to Mark Devers Church in Washington, D.C., Capitol Hill Baptist Church. Mm-hmm. And that one inspires me. Mm-hmm. It was different than I expected, but just seeing a very vibrant, alive church, I walked away, like reading about it is one thing, actually experiencing it really encouraged me. So that would be one that I look to.
Very cool. If you could get 15 minutes with any leader alive, who would you want to get it with and why?
Warren Buffett, for sure. And I think for two reasons. He's enigmatic. You know, I kind of know around him, mm-hmm. and yet there's this air of mm-hmm. mystery somehow about him. So, and I think he would just have a lot of wisdom to share, strategic wisdom about how to lead. Mm-hmm. So I would love 15 minutes with that guy.
Yeah, that's amazing. I know leading in a church takes a lot of time, effort, and energy. Being a church planner takes a lot of effort and energy. When you just want to kick back, relax, enjoy life a little bit, where do you find yourself spending your days?
What I like to do, I love where I live. So what I love to do is just to explore the city of Toronto. And there's so many amazing restaurants, streets, and neighborhoods. And I feel like, man, I could just go out and walk all day throughout the city, maybe with a camera or just with my wife. I just love that. It's probably my favorite thing to do.
Very cool. Well, I appreciate you being on the show today, Daryl. If people want to get in touch with you or with the church, what's the best way for them?
Best way to get in touch with me is through my website, dashhouse.com, D-A-S-H and then house.com. And the church is libertygrace.ca. And either one of those would be a good way to connect.
Perfect. Appreciate you being on the show today, Daryl.
It is a privilege. Thank you for your ministry. I really appreciate it.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's Unseminary Podcast. Don't be shy. We'd love to connect. Check out Unseminary Inbox. You can sign up at unseminary.com and we'll send you helpful training resources every week. Plus, you'll gain immediate access to our exclusive members area with tons of resources you can use. Connect with Rich on Twitter at Rich Birch or through email, rich@unseminary.com. Don't forget to check out the show notes for this episode at unseminary.com. It includes links to what we talked about today and more. Leave a comment. We'd love to hear from you. Did you enjoy today's episode? Drop by iTunes and leave a review. Thanks again for tuning in to this week's Unseminary podcast. Join us next week when we'll learn more stuff we wish they taught in seminary.